Greetings all, and welcome back to another episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings Podcast. Now, I usually don't begin my episodes like this, but this time I'd like to ask at the beginning, for those of you who do appreciate this podcast and haven't yet left a rating or written a little review, I'd be ever so grateful if you do so. Those ratings and reviews help other people find us and help me to feel shiny inside and feel like I'm doing a good job. So thank you to all of you who listen already and for all the support you've given me over the years. And yes, I have another excellent human being to introduce you to this week, and his name is Oscar Vasquez. Now, Oscar is, like most of my guests, really, really funny, and I don't know what it is, but this podcast really seems to draw guests that have an excellent sense of humor. Now, when I began the interview with Oscar, I thought we were going to talk about one thing in regards to miracles and magic, those things that are mysterious that we can't explain. But as we continued talking, it became very clear that Oscar has had multiple miraculous experiences in his life. And I would say the biggest one is his mother. And to be honest, by the end of our conversation, I was thinking, we need people like Oscar's mother everywhere. I mean, we just do. So now, without further ado, here's my conversation with Oscar Vasquez.
I'll tell you, yeah. 2 years ago, I had my gallbladder removed and I got sepsis. And sepsis is 95% of the people get it's a blood poisoning and it shuts down your organs. And the doctor said, she goes, if you want to say something to your wife, right now is the time, because you got sepsis, your organs may start to shut down.
Who are you as a human being? If you had to go to a party or a conference and you had to introduce yourself to a group of people, how would you do that?
So I'll tell you who I am. I would say my name is Oscar Vasquez, and I help homeowners protect the two things that are near and dear to their heart, their money and their family.
I love that. At least you hope their family is near and dear to their heart.
Well, some families, man, are just, there's something else.
It's so true. Well, I'm curious now, what led you want to do this kind of job? Was it something that you saw in childhood? Was it like, how did you get drawn to this?
I'll tell you, I've been in the real estate industry for 28 years and 15 years into the real estate as a real estate broker agent. People started to die. And their family members would come to me and say, you know what, mom died and I have an attorney that says that I have to pay him $50,000 to protect my house. And he said, I don't have to pay him until I sell the house. I don't want to sell the house. What do I do? And when you hear that three or four times, you start to educate your clients and saying, hey, this is what's going to happen if you don't get a living trust. So we started to do that. Then the cost went from like $600 to like $5,000 to create a living trust. And because the probate cost to probate costs in California went from like $10,000 to like $80,000 to like, it's like 8% of it's 6 to 8% of your home is what you're going to pay in court and attorney fees. And so the cost went out. So attorneys, you know, started charging $4,000 to $5,000, and my clients, it was not reachable for them. So I found we founded Estate Doc Prep, a software company that makes a comprehensive living trust affordable to the masses. And that's why we got here today.
I think that's probably one of your good works, as they say, because I do think navigating, I mean, first of all, one would think maybe you lived in this house 30, 40 years, you love it, it's your home. And then you're confronted with, you know, maybe your mother dies or maybe someone passes away. And I think families and people really need someone they can rely on or trust. And it sounds like you stepped right into there and did it. Was it really stressful? I mean, is it stressful to be there for people at these moments in their lives?
You know, it's not, because we understand the process. And in when you know, when you've been down that road, helping families, when you've been down that road, you already know what it looks like. You already know all the forks in the road. You already know to go right or go left. And once you've done it and you've helped so many people, and you've helped the ones that didn't have it and the ones that have it, you just tell the ones, like I always tell people, you want to know, if you don't understand probate, go ask your friends and family if they know anybody that, if they have anybody or know anybody that went to probate, and how'd they like it? And they're the first people that, those people that do that homework, they're the first people that call me. Because they're like, oh my God, this lady took 8 years, and that one took 6 years, and they took half the, some scammer to put a filed a claim against the estate, and it was like $10,000, and the attorney wanted like $7,000 to fight the case, and that, I mean, it was, you start hearing all of these things. And then you say, I always tell people, listen, I'm here to educate. I'll tell you what it is. You make the decision. I said, you know, it's your things. At the end of the day, the estate plan is ours, those that who create it, but the beneficiaries, which is our loved ones or the organizations we love. Cause I had a lady the other day that was at a workshop. She goes, I own 9 houses, but I want to leave them to 9 different cat shelters. And I'm like, you don't have any kids? And she goes, no, I have 92 cats, and I want to do, and I'm like having my own shelter, but I want to give that to, so I want, she created a trust because of two, the one was to give it to the charities, and the second reason she carried it was because she read that Medicare attaches your house if you get assistance through long-term care. And so she wanted to put it in the trust because she said a trust will protect that. And I said, yeah, it does protect that. So she wanted to do that, but that's called the charity trust. And that was something that was near and dear to her heart because she had no kids. Her and her husband didn't have any. So.
Okay. You are amazing. I can't believe, I wouldn't have even thought of being involved in something like this, or even how you could be of service to someone. That is utterly astonishing. So let me ask you, we were talking before, do you live in California, or have you lived in California your whole life?
Yeah. We're a immigrant family. We came from Mexico in 1972.
Okay.
We're farm laborers in Southern California in the city of Pacoima. And then we moved to a small town called Piru, P-I-R-U. It's about population back then was like 300, and it was all farm labor. It was all farm labor families. And so we've lived here, and my dad died in 76, and we've been here for that.
Well, let me ask you, I love asking this question. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I'll tell you, I had a dream. When I was a kid, I just said, Mom, I want to be rich. You know, I just want to have money. I want to be rich. And my mom always said, you know, you are already rich. As long as you're honest and pure in your heart, you're wealthy. And the things, and no thing material will ever satisfy that. If it'll be temporary, but it won't last. And it's kind of be like your money. That means if you're honest and hardworking, you'll never be cold, you'll never be hungry, and be happy and grateful for the things that God has given you. And I'm like, wow, I still want to be rich.
Looking at where you are now in your life and what you're doing, were there any inklings in your childhood that this is, in fact, where you'd be or where you'd end up?
When I was a kid, I never visualized where I was going to be. I always knew this. I've always had a ton of energy. I just love being around people, but I never knew where I was going to be. I knew that I've had many blessings. I know I was going to be blessed because my mom was really, really to the core, super Catholic, and she prayed for us a lot. And you know, I used to say, man, I did this and I did that. And she'd say, wait, well, you better go to church and thank God for that. Right. She would always remind me that my talents and the things that I have were because those are gifts that God gave me, and that I could do, you could do well or do good or do harm. So, you know, and she would always put the fear in us that if you do things wrong, your money will turn into water and you will always be hungry. Right? And I'm like, wow, I don't want to be hungry. I love to eat. I'm a foodie.
I've never heard that before. Wait a second. So if you do harm, your money will turn to water and you will go hungry.
Yeah. So in other words, like she would say, to explain it to us, what she would say, she goes, let me give you an example. My father's side of the family, we don't talk to him, but my father's side of the family is in the Sinaloa cartel. And she says, I'm gonna give you an example. Those guys make millions and millions of dollars, but they have no peace and they have no happiness, and they are still seeking something, and they think because they buy all these things, they can have it, but they don't have nothing. And she goes, you see, we have the biggest thing which is our peace that has more value than anything. And so, and I said, so what does that have to do with water? She says, well, you know, I mean, that was my question. Like, what does that have to do with water? And so what she meant was that the money would disappear and go through your hands because you can't hold water in your hands. You can't retain water in your hands. She's just like, hold water in your hands. It'll be there very shortly, very temporarily, because it'll go right through your hands. And that means you'll never be able to maintain it. Now, if you do things right, you don't harm others, and you do it honestly, and you move forward, then you'll have an abundance. And that has been true. And that's the principles that we try to live by.
Okay. She sounds like a brilliant, brilliant human being. And I mean, I feel like if I was a kid and someone said that to me, I don't even know if I would understand what they were saying.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta understand. I wasn't the average kid. I had deep conversations with my mom. And, you know, I got to tell you, the last 6 months of her life is where I really, really understood the sacrifices that she did to raise five children. She worked three jobs for 22 years until my sister and I retired her. We gave her a paycheck. So we made enough money to replace her income. The first month we said, okay, Mom, here, you could retire. Here's the check. And she says, okay, thank you, son. The second month, we did that. On the ninth month, she gave her 30-day notice. She waited 9 months. And I'm like, why did you? She goes, oh, thank you. And she goes, I can't believe that this is real. I couldn't believe it. So that was the get. That was probably the the biggest accomplishment that I would say that for me was like when you say, you know, you feel that you've made it, is when you could keep your mom at home and send her a paycheck and replace her income and then not have to worry about it. Then you that was a gift, I think, that you do. But you know what? I mean, and she was something else, because when she was retired, we would be there. And I remember one time she said, you know, I'm going to go back to work. I'm like, why? She goes, you know, I'm going to go back to work because the house needs windows. And I figured if I can just go get a part-time job, I can get, you know, I can pay for the windows. I said, Mom, now I know where I get it. She's like, what, get what? I know I get where the salesmanship. You're making me feel gout. You're giving me the guilty clothes, right? The guilty clothes. And she would say, no, not at all. I don't want that. I don't want, you know, you guys have been great kids. You guys, no, I want to just do it on my own. I said, I'm not going to let you go back to work. What the hell's the matter with you? So we ended up getting her windows. but I kind of learned that, you know, that like, hey, now I know where I get it. But yeah, she would tell stories. And yeah, she was, you know what? My mother was hardworking, honest. And I think, you know, more than anything, she was a woman of faith, I think, if I were to describe her. And I think that embedded us into us to always do the right thing.
Wow. You know, my second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household? And you've kind of already answered that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know what? On Saturday, if you didn't go to church with mom on Saturday, you better not come home on Sunday, because man, she would know. It was going to church as a family was more important than having dinner at home. Going to church was that thing, right? You go, thank God, go did it. And, you know, and I used to always tell her, you know, like, it was always $20. And I always say, Mom, why do you always give $20? Why? And she goes, and back then when she passed, we found some paycheck stubs, and she was giving $20, and she was making $170 a week. Imagine that. She was giving $20 a week. But she said, you know what? She bought a house. She bought a house on that one paycheck. I'm sure she had three jobs. So she bought a house. She raised five kids. We were never hungry. And I used to, you know, like she would say, you know, what was the, and I said, you know what, Mom, I remember we being kids. I'm running around on Saturday nights, and she would make flour tortillas, like homemade flour tortillas with butter. I said, man, those are like some of the funnest times. And I said, I always wondered, you know, I would never ask you, why always Saturday nights? She goes, because the church gave flour on Saturday mornings. And that's what we had for dinner. And I'm like, holy shit, really? That was like, man, we were like dirt poor. And she goes, no, we were never poor. Because were you ever hungry? I said, no. Were you ever cold? No. I said, so we weren't poor. And I said, wow, that's when you have those conversations at the end of life with your mother, or what that I did, right? That really truly affected that. That was when you kind of realize, you go like, wow, this woman is a hero, man. She's, you know, she raised five kids on her own. She dedicated her life to her kids and to the church, you know? And no matter what, we would go out when we were teenagers, we'd get home at 2 a.m. She'd be there waiting, praying the rosary. I'm glad you're home. She wouldn't say nothing, right? I mean, she wouldn't get upset. She goes, I'm just glad you're home. You know, okay, you made it home. Good. Get some sleep. You know, I was like, wow. I said, how'd it go last night with your mom? And I go, shit, my mom was cool, bro. She was waiting for me. No, but that's, you know, that's the things that we look at.
I have to tell you, she sounds like a force of nature. I wish I could have known her. She yeah. sounds like an absolutely incredible human being. Also, I don't know, has anyone told you that you are a fabulous storyteller?
Has anybody told me that?
Yeah. I mean, they should. You should be hearing that like all the time. You're a great storyteller.
Oh, no. Yeah. I've never heard that, but.
Yeah. But, oh, my gosh.
Well, they're just the truth.
Yeah. No, I know. But, you know, some people can tell stories and they're just so gifted at it, like just filling in all the blanks. That's you. And other people just don't have that capacity. So own it. Own your great storytelling.
I would do that.
Okay, good. Well, I already know because you alluded in your pitch to me to come on the show about a couple stories, because essentially this podcast is about, you know, people either witnessing or experiencing something magical, something miraculous, something that can't be explained in their lives. And it's meant to help others understand that this place, despite everything that's going on, is actually a magical, miraculous place, a wonderful place to be in. And so I would love to hear any stories that you'd like to share. Like, for example, you talked about how estate plans unearth family mysteries and miracles. I'd love to hear that. Or, you know, you talked about how the universe intervenes in life's final acts when people confront their mortality. So whatever you feel like sharing, because I feel like you could tell multiple stories because you're just so good at it.
You know, I think there's so many situations. I mean, I've helped so many families create living trust, and that's where I get a lot of the stories because I lived it with them, you know. But I think more than anything, I think that people that have a living trust all have one thing in common, and they all love somebody. They all love their kids. They all love somebody, and they don't do it because they understand an estate plan is not for you, because you'll be dead. Therefore, all the money savings and all of the tranquility and everything that you do is for the love of somebody else, because somebody else will benefit. And I think that that's the one thing that they all have. But I mean, I don't know what story I was thinking about then, but I have probably 40 to 50 families a week on living trust. And then on top of that, I have conversations with people call me all the time. Hey, Oscar, we got this. Or, you know, I must go to like every Saturday night, I must have like not a gig, but like a party to go to, because everybody's always inviting me. And I don't want to always go because I just want to rest sometimes. But my wife says, you know, people invite you because they want you there. They don't call you. They don't send you an invite on Facebook. They don't. No, they pick up the phone and they call you. And that means that they want you there. You need to be there. And I'm like, I know, but I'm tired. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You know, that's the commitment. That's the commitment you have to the relationship. And you never want anybody to think, like people that, like our family in Mexico, they go like, man, you guys are well off. You do this. And then when they come and visit, they're like, man, you guys are simple people. I said, bro, just because you got it don't mean you got to spend it. One. Two, simple is not, you know, like I was telling you, my mom, you know, would always give us, she gave us a lot of definitions that having nice stuff is not the biggest pleasure. I mean, we'd go to lunch with my sisters and it would be a 2.5-3 hour lunch. And we would just tip the waitress, say, listen, we haven't seen each other for a while. We're going to be here for a bit. We're just going to tip you really well. That's okay. Just bring us some drinks and just keep serving us. But we're going to tip you well because, you know, we just want to go in. So as far as stories, you ask me a question and I'll see what comes up and I'll tell you if I have something and I'll go in and I'll tell you if I have a case or something that I know of that and I'll bring it. But I'll be honest with you. I got a good memory. It's just short.
I love that. I should start using that. I've got a great memory. It's just short. Well, you know, do you have any stories about anything that's happened in your life that you kind of consider to be magical or miraculous?
I'll tell you. Yeah. 2 years ago, I had my gallbladder removed and I got sepsis. And sepsis is 95% of the people get a it's a blood poisoning and it shuts down your organs. And the doctor said, you know, she goes, if you want to say something to your wife, right now is the time because you got sepsis, your organs may start to shut down. And I don't know. I mean, it's not good. I just want you to know, because I would tell him, dude, just fucking tell me the truth, man. Don't just tell me, where am I at? Because I said, I'm not, you know, and he goes, listen, you just tested it. And so we sat down. The first thing we did is for prayers. And then the doctor said, you know what? We're going to see. They had like 9 IVs in me to just kind of like with antibiotics. And we prayed. And then I started telling my wife all the things, because he says, here's the thing. We're going to fill you up with as many fluids, but it's important that when you stop, when you can't talk, so you need to continue to talk. And my wife saw, oh yeah, he could talk. That's one thing he can do is talk. He said, you talk until you can't breathe. And then when you can't breathe or you start to cough up antibiotics, we'll give you a pill and then you can urinate it. And then we'll just keep doing that until we get that down. And so I went through that process and my wife and I, so I sat down and I just told my wife, okay, write all this stuff down. This is what's going on with all the businesses. I run four different businesses. One of the gifts that God gave me was a talent to make it rain. It's to bring traffic and business and make that. I say talent because my mom said it was never me. It was always God. So, and I say that's a talent God gave me. So so what happened is we survived from it. I was there 45 days. And when I got out, the doctor was memorized, like going like, dude, you have no side effects. It's like, you know, normally you get kidney failure, normally you get, you know, all kinds of liver failure, or you get something, nothing. You are like, you are there. This is like a, you know, this happens to like 2% of the people. This is like unreal. And I was like, well, that's, you know, thank you, mom. Right. Yes. Yes. Cause I know that was the prayers of her praying for me. And I think more than anything, I think that, you know, God left us here for one, maybe to impact lives, because, you know, people go like, dude, like we do trust sometimes for some people that they just don't have the resources, and, or we donate it, man. We, you know, or we give them a payment plan that is like ridiculous, like $100 a week or $100 a month for like whatever. And we know a lot of them are not going to pay it. It's not going to happen. But you know what? We just say, you know what? It's something that we give back. And if we have that ability to do it, we do it. We just give back. Like my wife always says, you know, you always give people all these ideas and the businesses. You should start charging for consulting. I said, no, I don't want to. We don't need, but I want to give it back as a way of, I mean, I've owned in the last 30 years, probably 15 different businesses, and I've exited out of 5. And so I know a little bit about everything. And when people call me, I have this matrix looking thing that I can see a business and say, here's how we should generate more business, or there's this holes in it. And I give that out, and she says, why do you do that? And I said, because one, I enjoy it. It's satisfying. Like, you know, like every time a kid comes to the door, and they're a kid, they remind me of me going door knocking, and I buy all their stuff. Whatever they have, I buy everything. They're like, really? I said, yeah. I said, well, how much is that? What do we do now? What kind of deal can you give me? Why should I use, why are you? And I mean, I'm sitting there drilling the kid for like 10 minutes. Like, she walks out, she says, leave him alone. Just buy the stuff. No. I'm teaching him, you know, sell me on this idea. And they're like, but and then I start asking, you know, first I fresh them up, but I always buy all their stuff. Like they buy candy bars. Like the other day, they're selling, I don't know if you remember, we had fundraisers. There were $1 candy bars when you were a kid. Now they're 10 bucks. I'm like, holy crap. I told the kid, I said, bro, are you going to like college or something for this money? How could this be a fundraiser? $10 for a candy bar. And I'm like, this is insane. Anyways, I dropped $150 on candy bars because he had 10 candy bars. And that's my rule, right? I said, just anything they come, if they come in my door and they can sell me on the idea, I'm going to buy it, whatever. I bought subscriptions. I've bought, you name it, I've bought it. I mean, one of our neighbors, I even told him, I said, you can only come once a month. We have this, we call them the, there's like 14 kids. She's had 14 kids, one every year, our neighbor. They're homeschooled and they always come barefooted to my house and they always try to sell me like these things, right? Always. And I always buy them. And so I said, okay, here's the rule. You can only come one time. If I'm not home, you got to wait the next month. You can't keep coming back because you're killing me, Larry, you know?
That sounds like a really slippery slope, quite honestly, especially if you have 14 kids and they're all trying to sell something. And you're so amazing and magnanimous. And you're like, yes, I'll buy it all, but let's have a conversation. Thank you for sharing that story about the sepsis, because I really don't think most people understand how serious that is.
Oh, no, that's serious stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine the doctor telling you, hey, there's something you're going to tell your wife. Right now is the time because your organs are about to shut down.
Yeah. And I was actually thinking while you were telling the story, I thought, oh my gosh, your mom was such a badass. I know that she got in there with prayers and just, you know, working with God to like change the outcome so that you could be safe and not die potentially. But also it's astonishing how none of your organs were injured either. I think that's totally crazy.
Well, it's a miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my medical doctor goes like, dude, whatever you've done, you know, you just got paid back. you whatever you did in the past to get that, that's really, really, I mean, cause I'm diabetic. I'm, you know, I have high blood pressure. I mean, there's a lot of things that is wrong with me, you know, but to be able not to have that is truly a gift and a miracle, I call it.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And also, like, just talking with you, especially about your mother, I think your mother was a miracle. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, my mother was, you know what? She was amazing. In so many ways that she was just kind and she was just, I mean, you know what? It's, you could not, And maybe I'm biased because she's my mother, but everybody that's ever met her would say, man, your mom is so, so nice. What the hell happened to you? or like they say that about my wife, right? They go like, dude, you and your wife, my wife is super conservative. She's so much like my mother. She is. She's very religious. She's hardcore. She's always about the right thing. She doesn't care. Like I had when we were doing really, really, really well when we in our company, I bought her a car. It was like back then the 7 Series 750 was like 90 grand. And I bought her the car. She made me take it back. I don't want the car. I said, I don't want the car. I don't want it. And then I said, well, you know what? If they take it back, they're going to buy it back and we're going to lose like $30,000. She goes, you're forcing me anyway. So, but it, I'm going to tell you what though, after she drove that for like a week, she goes, ah, this is a nice car. This is nice. You know, she liked it then, but you know, she's been very conservative, and that's where we are today, you know, because of her being not frugal, but just being smart, I guess. And not, it's not about, you know, like she'll give more out than she'll spend on herself. Like she'll go buy all her sister's things and she won't buy herself anything. I'm like, why didn't you get yourself something? Well, because I bought all the shoes and I already spent all that money. And then I'm like, why didn't you get any? She goes, well, because I already spent that money. Like, it's like if I got it. And I'm like, oh, honey, that is so sweet. Now we've just turned 30 years married this month.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah. So now she's, you know, now I always say, you know, it's funny how people change. And I say, why? Because she wants to go. We're going to go. And I said, where do you want to go? And about 5 years ago, she said, where do you want to go? And I said, surprise me. She goes, I don't know. No nice restaurants. So I said, well, then call Mary, my sister, because we're foodies, right? We so my sister introduced her to, it's a restaurant called 71 and Above. It sits on the 71st floor in downtown LA. It's awesome food. And so I went there, and then so then I told her Wednesday, I said, where do you want to go? We just go out to dinner, wherever you want to go. I said, and I always think, because one of the things I would get my mom to dream, and I say, Mom, if you could eat anything in the world, what would it be? And she goes, what do you mean? I said, anything. If you could just eat anything, doesn't matter what it is, I'll make sure I'll bring it. I'll get it here. And she would be like, I don't know. And I said, Mom, anything. You can't think. I said, pretend you're a kid and just think of it. So I started telling her the other day. So my mom would come up with all these silly things like, I want to do, you know, because she never traveled. My mother never traveled because she had five kids and we were always hungry and she was always working. But anyway, so my wife, so I tell her, I said, what do you want to go? And she said, you know, that restaurant I took you was nice. I said, honey, that was like, what happened to Mrs. Conservative? I mean, man, you want to drop some money. But anyway, she goes, you have said anywhere. And I'm like, no, I'm kidding. So I said, okay, take me to Taco Bell. I go, I know you don't eat Taco Bell. Come on.
Well, I mean, honestly, you can say that your wife has good taste, right?
Yeah, she does. I always say, you know, I always say, like, she always goes, you know, like, that was another conversation. She goes, you work so much. I said, well, you should have married a good-looking lazy man. Instead of a fat, ugly, bad looking, hardworking guy. And then she started laughing, like, what? I said, yeah, you know, those pretty boys that don't work because they're all pretty. And I said, you know, so then she started laughing. And I always told her one of the things, true story, I used to tell her, you know, you should marry me. And when I was trying to convince her to marry me, she goes, yeah, why? I said, because I'm going to be rich someday. We were like 19, 20. I said, I'm going to be rich. I'm going to be so rich. You should marry me before I get rich. And every time I tell that story, like to our friends and like, cause some of her like friends and family, she said, they always go like, really? Did he say that? She goes, yeah. And she goes, and I'm still waiting. He still ain't rich. I said, hey, It ain't over yet. I got one more fight. I got one more move.
Now, as I'm sure you've guessed, Oscar out in the world, Oscar in the wild, he has his own business and is the founder of EstateDocPrep.com. And he is out there, and I do think really, really, really kind of led by his mother's example, helping to make this world an easier place to be in, a more magical place to be in. And he's really there for people who might not otherwise have other options, because sometimes these end-of-life events, these end-of-life, you know, kind of tying up all the loose ends, they can get really, really expensive for the average person. And so Oscar is really, to my mind, I mean, honestly, carrying his mother's legacy forward in the form of the work that he does with everyone out there and his business and his website, estatedocprep.com. Now, in the episode show notes, there's going to be an offer from Oscar. There's going to be a link to his website and a little bit more information about how Oscar can potentially help you and what you're planning for your end-of-life care. So be sure to check that out. I, for one, am grateful that Oscar is in the world. I, for one, am grateful for Oscar's mother and her strength, her bravery, her being completely unstoppable. And like I said at the beginning, we need more people like that in the world. People who will lift others up and keep going despite incredible odds. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Oscar. Honor your ancestors. I mean, yes, sometimes our ancestors are a little questionable. Sometimes they've done things that we are not proud of, that we might be ashamed of, that we might feel embarrassed of. But every single person has something that makes them beautiful, that makes them shiny, that creates good in the world. And so find those places, those spaces, those pieces of your ancestors that make your soul shine, and recognize them inside yourself, because you do carry your ancestors' stories, their trials, their triumphs, their tragedies, their traumas. And I think by recognizing that and understanding that we carry this lineage within us, these stories within us, we can use those parts of ourselves, those parts of our ancestors, to become even more formidable in the world, to become stronger, to become braver, to become even more of a beacon of light in the world to others that might need it. So be like Oscar, honor your ancestors, and go forth. Go out into the world with all of your ancestors' brilliance, with all of their traumas and strengths and tragedies, just knowing that each and every one of those parts of yourself, they make you. And thus, they have created an excellent and beautiful human being. Oh my God.
If there's anything that I can ever do for you, you have my number. Let's connect.
Yeah. And also, like, your mom, thank you for telling me about your mom, because wow, that's all I have to say. I'm just so glad to know that she was in the world. She's in the world. You know what I mean? She's like all that love and just tenacity and strength and not giving up and just being so brave, you know? So
just one more time. That's all she said. Yeah. You know, I've had a lot of failed businesses, and I used to always go to her. And I said, you know, Mom, I don't think I'm favored by God anymore. And she goes, no, it's not that you're not favored. It just, that's not what he's chosen for you. Just move on.
I love that.
Go do another one. That's not, you know, that's not what he's chosen. I said, I know, but that's what I wanted. It was, Mom, obviously what you want doesn't matter. I get it, Mother. I said, oh my God. And then one time we had a really, really bad. It was like, oh my God, I felt so bad. I would go to her and I said, you know, Mom, give me strength. And she goes, nah, you gotta go to church for that or pray for God. And I said, Jen, she said, you know, Mom, I feel so down, and I'm down. It's like I nothing's working for me. And she said, you know, it's part of the growth of growing of who you're becoming, because God's putting you through a transformation stage. Mm-hmm. And he'll choke you, but he won't kill you. And he's gonna test, he's testing you. But, you know, she would say this thing. She said, well, like, you gotta have faith. I gotta have faith. And she said, do you? I said, yeah, I do. I said, let me tell you, if you were hanging off of a cliff, you were having the branch, you were hanging by a branch. Mm-hmm. And you said ask God to save you. And God said, I'll save you if you let go. Wow. She goes, that's how much faith you have to have. And I'm like, oh my God, Mom. Are you kidding? So I have to die to prove that I'm faith? She goes, No. The moral of the story is that you have to believe that much in God to have that blind faith, to let go. That means that he has to be more important than you. And when that happens, you'll be unstoppable, son. And just keep that night. And that's why, you know, Sundays is, I don't come to work until 1 o'clock. I don't work from 8 o'clock. We go to brunch or we go do something. We do it because my wife usually starts doing stuff around the house. And I'm like, I don't watch TV. I can't. Okay. And I don't, because I read sometimes where it says, if you watch TV, you're watching other people accomplish or living their dream while yours is dying. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to do that.